You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where social distancing is a way of life. Hell, we record this podcast from three different states. I'm your host, Justin Ablazneski, currently located in Orlando, Florida, which hasn't really had much. There was one case of coronavirus in Orange County and one case in Osceola County. That's the two counties that overlap Disney World. Most of Florida seems to be on the coast where the old rich white people who traveled were, and also in the Miami-Dade area. Southern Florida seems to be the epicenter of Florida, although all the predictions are saying that all of us are going to end up where Italy is. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
I didn't think I'd be able to do this show with the mask on my face, but it's actually surprisingly easy. I don't really have a mask on my face, Justin. Calm down. I could hear the panic in your voice.
I'm not panicking. I just don't know what to say to the mask thing, because when people wear the masks, it's not the sick people wearing them. And I really, when I see people wearing the masks, I want to go up to them and I want to say, you realize you're panicking people for no reason, because those are supposed to be for stopping you from transmitting things, not stopping you from receiving things.
Yes. Yeah. If you are not sick, don't wear a mask. That's ridiculous.
Right, because all you're going to do is have the people around you look at you being like, why is this asshole who's sick out in public?
Yes. So, D.C. is, you know, almost to the point of being shut down. The Metro is suspending some, if not most, of service for the time being.
So, service is normal?
At least it's not on fire. That's what we all said. Yeah. People are panicking. Every store is out of toilet paper and bottled water, because apparently people have never heard of sinks. But I don't know. It's weird.
It's funny because the sink thing covers both of the things you said.
If you've got one of those sinks with the sprayer on them, then you've got
That's true. It's an at-home bidet.
That's right. Makeshift.
Does Europe have the same toilet paper problem? Because they all have bidets in Europe, don't they?
Interesting question. I don't think the Europeans are panic buying toilet paper. Americans love their toilet paper.
Let us know, European midsiders. That's an interesting question. Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his gay white male privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, the stores here are out of meat as well as toilet paper. The panic is real. There's tons of people. Oops, sorry. The dog is being very noisy all of a sudden. People are panicking everywhere. My work is remote only for a section of employees next week, but not to worry. I'm going to kickball later this afternoon, and despite the mud canceling the actual game, we're going to meet at Jersey Mike's and enjoy some sandwiches and go be social. We're going to be doing the opposite of social distancing. So
how dare you?
I know. I like to live on the edge.
But I mean, I was at Epcot last night, so I don't know if I have much room to talk. But maybe that's what we should talk about. I think let's forego a normal episode here. And, you know, I don't want to do any reviews or anything, although I will say go see Onward when you get the chance. Just go to a movie theater. AMC cut their attendance by 50%, but you can still go. Although that's something I love about this. Speaking of social distancing, William, and I'll hit the transition in a second here, everyone. But AMC cut their attendance their capacity by 50%. So when a theater is 50% full, it's going to be considered sold out. What I want to know is, are they requiring people to buy every other seat? Because what's going to happen is all you're going to have is 50% of the theater full, but it's going to be the middle 50% seats.
Yeah. Are they forcing people to sit at the very top and the very bottom?
Right. So there, all of this, and I think this is what we'll head into here. All of this seems to be a lot more showy than it does reality. And I think we need to talk about what the reality of this situation is in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Well, we'll forego the Patreon plug this week, patreon.com/TheMidSide, and get right into the news, which the most important news of the week is, of course, the fact that the Daily Star is reporting that sex dolls with implanted human hair leave people certain it's real. So, discuss, guys.
Wait, those aren't real?
Just kidding. Of course, we're not going to talk about sex dolls this week. Of course, we're going to talk about...
Can I give you credit? I'm impressed you found another headline.
I actually had to dig quite a bit to find any non-corona-related headline. No, hashtag COVID-19 is all the news everywhere all the time. And maybe for good reason, maybe for bad reason, but certainly for reason. In want of reason, I should say. So
yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it's exactly rational.
Here's the latest. I'm using the Johns Hopkins dashboard, which many people are using, including the CDC. Worldwide confirmed cases crossed 150,000. Worldwide confirmed deaths at about 5,800. Total recovered of those people, 73,968. Not of the dead people, obviously. Places like Italy have been super hard hit, and Iran have been super hard hit. Next up, I think, is Spain and France. South Korea has mostly dealt with their issue. China has mostly dealt with their issue. The United States could theoretically be slammed in the next little while. Things are shutting down. People are panic buying toilet paper. We've learned a whole bunch of new terms like social distancing and flatten the curve. And people are yelling at each other on Twitter, so at least some things stay the same. My job is giving optional remote work starting on Monday. I have some meetings on Monday that I really cannot miss and that don't look like they're going to be canceled. So I'll be going into work on Monday with reduced metro access. And for the most part, the country is, according to a recent poll, somewhat concerned. So, Justin, if this is somewhat concerned, what might it look like if we get to, heaven forbid, very concerned?
That's an interesting question because it depends on what side you're talking about here. Are you talking about the people or the government?
Well, this is a poll of just, I think it was 15,000 Americans and something like 54% of which said they were somewhat concerned.
Okay, I think if we saw full concern from the people, I think what we would see is more than just a run on toilet paper. I think that the stores would just be completely bought out except for maybe like the toy section or something. But I think all the food and all the groceries would just be gone. I think that's what would happen if everyone was fully concerned. But that's not my concern. That's not
my concern. Your concern is not the concern?
No, my concern is not the concern. My concern here is, and this is what I was hinting at when we were coming in here, I need to know the reality of this situation because I get the whole flatten the curve thing, right? That all makes sense, right? All of that makes sense. I get not wanting to overload the system of people going in and you're not having enough beds to take care of specifically the people this is hurting the most, right? The elderly. I get the whole not letting people into nursing homes, right? Or is it still half the deaths in America have been in that one nursing home in Seattle?
I don't know how many deaths have been in America total. I should know that. I guess 40 deaths from Washington State, so...
Right, and like 25 of them have been that one nursing home. So yeah. I get that. And, you know, my mom tried to go see my grandmother yesterday because my grandmother is near the end. And the place she was at, like, flipped out on my mom for trying to go there. My mom was like, I explicitly called and they said to show up. And now I show up and you're flipping out on me. And that's my concern, okay? My concern is how much of this is real, and how much of this is a disease that's not that bad, a virus that's not that bad, being blown out of proportion for two means. One, to try and make Trump look bad. And by the way, Trump this past week, if you want to talk about 4D chess, holy shit did he outplay the media and the left. And two, how much of this is just the left government trying to get control over us? Because the next thing they're talking about is, and I haven't looked enough into this, and maybe you can explain it, Daniel, they're talking about putting us on lockdown like they did Italy. Explain to me how you can keep an entire country on lockdown besides using the military and weapons to keep people in their houses. And what I mean is literally you step outside and there's someone with a gun telling you to get back inside. And I see that potential future and I go, is it really that bad? Is this disease really that bad that it's worth this? What happens if we have a real apocalypse?
There are a lot of interesting questions there. And just to confirm numbers, known cases in the United States are about to cross 3,000. Known deaths, confirmed deaths in the United States are at 57, with 12 people recovered.
Let's put those numbers in context. How many people died in car accidents yesterday?
More than that, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I didn't look that up.
Well, he means theoretically, right? So if we Google daily, you keep talking, I'll look up daily car rate deaths.
Yeah. William, it's so 3,000 cases by most estimates is probably low because we're not really testing people yet. We haven't unleashed the full firing power of the United States testing capabilities. And so there's probably a bunch of people walking around who have it who don't know they have it.
Yeah,
does that concern you?
No, that doesn't concern me. For me personally, I am not in a high risk category, so it doesn't concern me. Certainly, I would not like to be a carrier and not know it. So, if there was a cheap test available and I would know to isolate myself, I certainly would. But at the same time, This is how diseases work, and it seems very odd the kinds of criticism that we've been seeing. I know Twitter has been hilariously in the last 2 months. We've got the bends from Twitter in the news. At first, you were racist for even pointing out that this disease might be a concern, something that you should track, and then the media in the last 2 weeks shifted, and it basically turned into the zombie apocalypse after that. And now every time we don't do something exactly like China or Italy, we must be a terrible society and a terrible government. And it is crazy to see, to confirm again, especially even among some people who I think should know better, like libertarians and objectivists, talking about the how the government should respond in situations like this and pointing out how terrible the government response is. That's cool. Except for the response that they're asking for would be impossible under a capitalist system. Does that make sense?
William, I agree. Yes, I agree with that completely. A lot of what's going on here is shows the corporatism that's in this economy, the corporatism that's in this culture, that things are so mixed. And I think it's even deeper than just like a policy level. I've never seen so many people argue in my entire lives that it's all about our obligation to the greater good now. I started to see this with Tom Hanks's statements, where he's like, we're going to do what we're told because that's what we need to protect ourselves as a culture and as a society and as a species. I'm paraphrasing. But it comes across very 1984 to me. And this is what I don't understand about what you said, your point about self-isolation. I don't think there's anything wrong with your point about self-isolation, but I want to look at this from a pure numbers standpoint. We know who the most vulnerable people are for this, correct?
Right.
We know it's the elderly, and we know it's the people with immune issues. So why, yes, then are we making the entire population self-quarantine and social distance and possibly go on lockdown when we could very well just say, take care of the elderly and take care of the people in your life who have immune issues? This is what Adam Carolla always says. Shouldn't we have a culture based on family values and based on your family takes care of people, your support structure takes care of people, and we don't need the government to do it? Shouldn't this be a time where I'm talking to my parents? They were talking about coming here in May to visit. I'm talking about my mom works in a hospital, and she, you know, I know that there's only one entrance into the hospital, and the employees go in through the basement, and any potential patient goes in through one entrance, and they're screened first. And I know my dad, who's had open heart surgery, doesn't go out in public. He just sits home all day. I mean, he does that anyway, but he's definitely doing it now. But my point is, I have made sure to have those conversations with my parents because they're the ones at risk, not me. So why are we sitting here and we're saying, oh, you 29-year-olds who are going to the bar, you should feel guilty because you're going to spread the disease? Why are we trying to make every single one of us sit at home when we know who the people who are at risk are? Isn't it better to get all of us who aren't at risk infected so we're all immune? So that if there is an issue later, fewer people get sick from that weak, from that category of people who are at risk?
All interesting thoughts. I'll be in the position of playing devil's advocate, but not strongly, actually. But I'll give you some things to chew on. How about that? So there's a couple things. One is, even among young people and healthy people, it could be more, theoretically, it's more dangerous than the flu. Not by a ton, but theoretically, it's more dangerous than the flu, and more people will get it than the flu. So I guess part of the argument is, even among young people, more of you are going to get this, and since it's more dangerous, more of you are going to be injured or die from it. So that's one reason to, you know, destroy the economy. And then secondly, it's the whole notion of you can be contagious but not know you have the disease. So you might be doing everything you can with your parents or grandparents, but let's say you're accidentally infecting people you don't know you're infecting, which is the second reason to tank the economy. Any reactions to those before I move on?
Well, I mean, you're being tongue-in-cheek, which I appreciate with your tank the economy thing, because my reaction is exactly the suppressed premise, the argument you're making indirectly by saying that. Is this serious enough to do that? I agree with you. If this is a disease that even has a 10% kill rate, maybe we should be doing this, or a virus that has a 10% kill rate. But first of all, the kill rate, the mortality rate is unknown, and it's between 3% and less than 1%. So is this really warranted? Everything you're saying, I agree with, but that's reality. Reality is there are bacteria. There are viruses in the air, and you can always get sick and be a carrier and not know it and affect other people. At what point is there a line where we think we can socially engineer reality that we're not human beings, that we're not beholden to reality, that we are above reality and can socially engineer it, and then... Yeah, that's it. That we think we can socially engineer reality to get around this.
Yeah, let me throw this part of my devil's advocate to William, which is, I hear Justin's point about collectivism, and we don't want to be collectivist about this. But at what point, even as an individual, do you have an obligation not to do things that could harm other people? I'm trying to be very vague here. Especially when you don't know if you're harming other people. Is there a point?
Well, I'd have to unpack that a bit because I can only act on what I know. And
thank
the
you.
Possibilities are there and probabilities. I know those too. That's all I can act on. So, currently today, I am acting like I am not infected because I show no symptoms, and I know there's a small possibility that I may be carrying, right? But I am not planning on randomly visiting a nursing home anytime soon or any other large gathering of old people, basically because old people smell. But I, as far as modifying by my behavior, you know, the groups of over 60 during this flatten the curve phase seems reasonable to me. So the whole working from home thing seems reasonable to me. You know, I have a coworker whose wife is in chemo, so that's you know, he's definitely work from home because, you know, he doesn't want to catch it and give it to his at-risk significant other. So these are examples of I guess I'm even in that example, though, Daniel, I'm putting in terms of things that value. So I might be blowing up the premise of your question there.
Well, no, I want you to unpack it because I do think we can, even people who should know better, can sometimes fall into collectivist thinking. And it may be that, so even if, whether it's collectivist thinking or individual thinking, maybe the outcome is sometimes the same, but I think it's important the route you take to get there. So I think understanding this, or any pandemic response, as a response to your values and how you determine those values and what and how you should act based on those values is much more important than simply saying, well, we arrived at the same decision, which is we shouldn't go outside. The way we think about things is incredibly important, because if we don't think about them correctly, we're going to lead eventually to bad decisions during this pandemic. So even some of the most educated experts on this, Amesh, Justin, I can't pronounce his last name.
I forget. It was A-D-A-L-J-I.
I will look it up. But he is an infectious disease specialist, Amesh Adalja, at Amesh AA on Twitter, does take this seriously, thinks that people should social distance and all those things, but is sort of vehemently against forced government quarantine, massive government action, locking people in their homes, etc., because of two things. One is, I don't think he thinks it's as effective as other measures. And two, at some point, effectiveness is no longer the measure by which we judge things. In fact, honestly, you know, we need to always keep in mind that we need to eschew pragmatism in favor of virtue thinking, individual rights, in favor of objective decisions, and not things that are simply that work in the moment. So, for instance, Justin, in your hypothetical where we are forced in our homes by National Guard, let's say that was incredibly effective to stop the spread of the disease. It wouldn't make it any more right. Yes.
I mean, I agree with even with the stuff Trump said, right? Like, isn't one of the things Trump did where he suspended national a student debt or student debt interest over this period?
Yeah, I forget all the exact things he did, but they were along those lines, yeah.
Yeah, but that was one thing somebody told me, and I go, well, I get why he did that. I get it. But also that terrifies me from my libertarian perspective, because now the president of the United States can just say, oh, at any time, there's no interest on your debt. Like, we're okay with that? We're okay with that.
Sure, so the president's just changing a contract between two people randomly. Yeah, we're okay
right.
with that.
There used to be a contracts clause in the Constitution before we decided to ignore it.
Right. And that's the point I think you're making, Daniel, is why are we looking to government to make all these changes that we're okay with, which we're just making that eschewing not only our individual rights, eroding was the word I'm looking for, eroding our individual rights, but our individual responsibility. And what I mean by that is this whole concept of social distancing.
Wait. Hold on, Justin. Are you saying that I'm not supposed to just look to the government to tell me what to do in a free society? That I'm supposed to figure it out for myself?
Yes. And I'm saying that based on what's happening, maybe you should reassess the way you're acting in your daily life to begin with. Because all these things people are saying for social distancing, and it's the reason I opened the show the way I did, are how I live my normal life. Now, the main difference for me now is I just don't shake as many people's hands or give as many high fives as I did before. But otherwise, I'm not going around touching a bunch of people. I'm not touching a bunch of stuff a bunch of other people have touched. There's not really much of a difference for me for social distancing. When I go out in public, I like to have my personal space. Right? Well, that's part of the reason I left California.
Well, Justin, I have a question. I have a question for you then. From a news story I submitted for this week, coronavirus in open relationships. Should I pause mine?
That's exactly the point. I mean, it's such a great question, and it's such a great farcical article because it's like, isn't what's happening showing the absurdity of open relationships? The idea that, okay, I'm going to be with someone, but I'm going to say they can fuck whoever they want.
Justin, this is from Slate. The best is the under headline, "My mother is immunocompromised," which opens many questions to me. Is your mother part of this open relationship, or are we talking about the risk because you have someone who's over 60? I'm not sure.
And this is exactly, it's wonderful farce because it points to what Daniel was saying, that the way we act is what's going to make us vulnerable in the long run. And a lot of what's happening is because we've made ourselves vulnerable through what the things like you're saying, William. Where we're putting ourselves in risk, right? That person in the open relationship, you're with someone who you let just go out and fuck whoever they want, and then they come back and fuck you. Do you not realize the risk you're putting yourself at when you do that? By not protecting yourself and treating your body seriously? Now I'm getting on my straight edge high horse, but you get the point I'm making, right? Isn't that in agreement with what you were saying, Daniel?
That's the highest of horses.
It's only the most obvious thing.
I agree. That's all good points. I think one of the interesting elements of this to me is the political side of it. So 538 did some polling of people who were self-identified Republicans and self-identified Democrats, and as you might expect, Democrats think that the situation is dire and Republicans think for the most part it's not. And you know, the same goes along for how the president is doing things.
Can I just pause you for a second there?
Yeah.
My mom described my dad this morning as a, quote, non-believer. So that shows you where the right wing is at.
And to
the point of that, my mom said, I go, I'm a non-believer too. And she goes, well, if you are, why are you worried about me going to work? And I said, well, you're at the at-risk category. Better to be safe than sorry. So see how I'm acting based on my principles and values and assessing reality that way?
Yeah.
Continue. Sorry.
I was going to say, and then they looked at data from the Obama administration, you know, the response to, what was it, swine flu? And you sort of have the opposite. You have Republicans thinking he handled that poorly, and you have Democrats thinking he did a great job. So part of my question here is, everyone, even if you're a libertarian and or an objectivist and you sort of eschew the right-left dichotomy, I think we all have senses of life that sort of have us sympathize with one side or the other. You see this in the concept of left libertarian or conservatarian or, you know, a pejorative term is obleftivists for people who sympathize with the left. But the idea is basically
South Park Republicans, which are basically right-wing libertarians.
Yeah. Basically, the idea here is we have at least senses of life that have us share some sympathies with one quote-unquote side or the other. And so my question is, in thinking about things like pandemics or things that aren't traditional political issues, how do we start to get outside of even our own sense of life and how we sympathize with one side or the other to view this as objectively as possible? Because there are objectivists who love Trump, who think that he's doing a great job, and there are objectivists who hate Trump, who think that he's doing a horrible job. And I could have told you exactly who those people were before this pandemic started if you had given me the scenario. So how do we get outside of that?
Where do we fit into that?
Well, I think you have to identify that for yourself. I mean, for me, I think growing up basically a jaded Republican because my mother was so far left when I was very young, I probably still have some sympathies with the right. Not really with Trump, for whatever reason. He doesn't fit into that for me, at least from a sense of life perspective. But I have some sympathies with Republicans, and I can catch myself sometimes doing that, and I have to be really cognizant of the fact that I have those sympathies. You'd have to evaluate that for yourself.
Right, I'm the same way with the right. I was specifically referring to the Trump thing because it's the same thing with me, where that does the thing for the right doesn't extend to Trump because I think he just took advantage of the party in order to get elected. So I don't have any sympathies for Trump, but I can see what's going on politically. And Daniel, we've talked over the week about the intent of all this politically, which is why I said at the top of the show that Trump's outplaying the left right now. In the media right now, from a purely strategic standpoint, I get everything that's going on. And again, like I said, I don't agree with everything he did, like the student loan data or the interest being wiped away for now. So I definitely don't have any sympathies there. But I do think the sense of life thing is an important conversation because I think it goes to the individualism versus collectivism conversation. And I think it goes to how do you survive in the world conversation? Because there are survival tactics with the way you approach your life. And, you know, you can argue whether it's important to have both or to have too much of one or too much of the other. But I think with the senses of life, you know, comes things like rugged individualism or survive as a culture. And I think someone like Adam Carolla sort of mixes the two where, you know, take care of your family, but also, you know, have yourself first. So maybe that's the way to go. But I do think the sense of life informs us as to how we live. And I think we in our culture channel it, in our country channel it in the two-party system. But I think if you move beyond that, it's really revealing of, do you overreact to something like this? Or do you say, we can deal with this? And I think maybe that's the big thing for me, and that's the point I'm trying to fumble for here, is how do you as an individual approach this? Do you think we're going to get through this? Do you think everything's going to be okay? Or are you panicking and you think we're going to fucking die and you think Italy's fucked right now? Because I, with my sense of life, I don't think things are as bad in Italy as it's being made out to be. Don't get me wrong. They're on lockdown. They have a lot of cases. But if you look at the numbers and you look at what human beings have survived and what individuals can survive, I think what individuals are capable of surviving, I think it's going to be fine. And I think it's going to be fine here. And I think that we're unnecessarily causing ourselves suffering in order to achieve an end that will already happen. Whereas the opposite sense of life of me would say that, no, this suffering is necessary so we don't suffer more. And I think that's the important discussion. Does that make sense?
Well, I think that's quite interesting. William, do you have any thoughts about this?
Not really. I've been just in awe about the lack of clear thinking by lots of different people. And I think to kind of answer Justin's question, like, that's what you have to do, is you have to actually do your own clear thinking on this. And that applies to everything in your life. So if you're someone who approaches life that way, where you're like, I want to think about this and I want to think clearly about this, then I think you get a more positive outlook. I think the danger here is someone who's stuck in this negative feedback loop here could hear this as Pollyannism or virus denial or impact denial, right? Like, it's easy if you're in this negative loop to see it that way, and that's not what's going on here. It's very much the mid side here.
Right, and your point, William, about people seeing it as virus denial is very well taken. Our point from the beginning, even last week, at least my point, and you guys can say if you agree or disagree, was never to deny this virus. It was deny the hysteria and deny the what I see as the extreme interpretation of this virus. I still, to this day, do not see, as I'm speaking, do not see this being as bad as it is. I see them reporting numbers, and they're growing. The numbers are growing, no doubt. But the numbers are so small. Daniel, you said, how many cases are there worldwide? 150,000 of 7 billion people on the planet? And then the response to me, they say, is, well, it's going to grow on an exponential curve. Okay. I agree. That makes sense to me. But to immediately jump to the exponential curve will be 7 billion people, or they say in the U.S., I've heard people say 200 million people are going to be infected. And then to say that it's going to drastically kill the amount of people that will change our society and be hugely tragic, I just don't see that being warranted. And so I start asking, why are we overhyping this? And that's where I get to the political things and when we start having these discussions about sense of life. And that's why William's point is very well taken about being a clear thinker on your own. And that's why I have trouble with the sense of life point of view. Because at a certain point, to me, when you're talking about individualism versus collectivism, it becomes collective thinking as a substitute for individual thinking. And that's what scares me the most of all, because that's what happens. That's what, to me, when you substitute collective thinking for individual thinking, that's where you end up with people who are usually pretty clear-headed, right? I don't know if you've seen Melissa Chen on Twitter. She has a pretty good account. She was on Joe Rogan recently, and she's usually pretty clear. But now she's trumpeting out there saying, we need to have a New York City on lockdown just like Italy. And for someone who's very usually pretty good, and I like her takes on things, and she's pretty funny, like when this first started, she posted a graphic of a meme of Han Solo in a mask, and it's called it Wuhan Flu. Right? So she's usually pretty good with this stuff. But now that sense of life, erring towards that, has her asking to be oppressed, basically. And that's my biggest problem with the whole discussion is, I don't even know if I can even grant validity, grant moral equivalency to the other sense of life, because I can see it only ending to ruin, because like William says, it doesn't lead to clear individual thinking.
So speaking of clear individual thinking, I wanted to bring this tweet up. This is a tweet from a doctor, apparently, saying, it's becoming clear that the spread of COVID-19 by people who are asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic may be responsible for more transmission than previously thought, making control of the virus more difficult. And someone responded to this and said, this is why it's selfish if you're young and healthy to go out and about in crowds because you think you're invincible. Don't do it. So, Justin, is it selfish? Like this. Is exactly what we were talking about.
I mean, it is selfish, but it is, this is their way of doing the package deal again, where selfish is bad. Because I'm glad you brought this up, because I wanted to say this earlier when it came up, and I think this is such the perfect point to make and the perfect point to bring up. This is why I get paranoid. Could they have designed a better virus to make altruism and collectivism look better? And what I mean by that is, rhetorically, they get to go, oh, well, this virus incubates for 2 weeks and you don't even know you have it, so you need to stay at home, you fucking selfish prick. Could you have written, like, did Hollywood write this? Did Hollywood write this? Could you have come up with a better virus? But then, I'm not a virologist or immunologist, whatever the fucking term is.
Like what virologist. I'm a sick doctor.
What are the incubation periods for every other disease? It just seems like the perfect rhetorical tactic to try and get rid of selfishness, to try and get rid of self-interest. Because, I could be sick for 2 weeks. I mean, is there any... Look, let me take their principle, Daniel, since you said, right, the idea of we need to be careful with our principles. Let me take that principle and apply it through life. Is there any point in my life that I know that I'm not sick?
I guess the answer is no.
So then should I ever go on public? Because I could potentially be transmitting something to someone that somehow could get someone killed. And if one death, let's use the Star Trek thing, right, William? One death is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And if one death is unacceptable and I could potentially get someone sick because I could potentially be a carrier that's asymptomatic, well, shouldn't I just kill myself?
Should I only have, as a gay man, should I only have sex the day I get The day I get instant HIV test results.
Yeah.
And even then, how do you know in that time period?
Well, I'd have to isolate I'd have to socially distance my penis from other penises during that time.
Or you'd have to, when you get the second you get the test results, you'd have to have someone right there with you to have your
sexual
celebration.
That'd be really awkward for the doctor.
Socially distance.
So Daniel, I have a question for you because we see this a lot. You know, I'm in the computer security field and we joke all the time. There's vulnerabilities and exploits released all the time. And some of them have better marketing departments and they get tons of attention. All the vendors start talking about how they protect against X and Y, these named exploits. Whereas sometimes the more vulnerable, the ones that are actually a bigger deal, they don't get the cool, sexy name and the web link and all the press coverage. So Daniel, as someone who works in this space, how good is the press guy for COVID-19, and what could they do to improve?
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. It's really, I don't think anyone has gotten more useful press since Donald Trump. And kind of what I mean by that is we're in an era where just overly talking about a thing means people are going to have some emotional reaction to it, even if they don't know anything about it. So the fact that the media talks about, or at least did before COVID showed up, COVID 2020 is what it should have been called.
Isn't this before, the Coney 2020 thing?
Before COVID showed up, all the media wanted to talk about was Donald Trump. That had the effect of everyone basically in the world has some emotional response to Donald Trump, positive or negative, even if they don't really know any facts about Donald Trump, because the media is just saying Donald Trump 150 million times a day. Now the media is saying COVID 150 million times a day, and so people are forming an emotional response to COVID-19, even if they don't have any knowledge about COVID-19, and that goes back to the sense of life issue that we were talking about earlier. Part of it, I think, is that the media doesn't do a good job of putting anything in context. Donald Trump is not put in context. COVID is not put in context. Socialism is not put in context. It is basically a platform designed for contextless communication. And the problem with contextless communication is that human beings, Justin, do what Aristotle called enthymematic thinking. Oh boy, getting into deep rhetoric here. An enthymeme is an argument.
I tried to teach some high schoolers in my debate class about enthymemes.
An enthymeme is an argument with one premise removed, one or more premises removed. And the point, the power of an enthymeme is that it allows the audience to put in their own premise. And so the real tragedy of contextless communication in this era is that it allows people to fill in whatever premises they want about the topic, which makes it their own, which makes it even, it weaponizes it. It weaponizes the topic, no matter what the topic is. And then people become entrenched. Entrenchment is bad.
Right, 100% it's bad. And part of what you're saying is the media has learned, and this is a point Scott Adams has made that I think is brilliant, the media has learned that just simply on a pragmatic level, if you push people's outrage buttons, their panic buttons, their fear buttons, you get more clicks. So there's just the simple business model of that. But then there's also the people within the media, and this is where I get my perspective on a lot of this, who are using this as a political leverage tool, as a way to try and get at Trump. And it's a lot of where my anger comes about this. And it's clear they were doing this to try and tank the economy to a certain extent. I mean, why was the first thing that went the NBA? That's not a coincidence. Once that NBA domino fell, everything else started to fall. That's not a coincidence. And you started to see, before Trump gave his press conference on Friday, which, I, by the way, I think that press conference was brilliant, and I think the moves he made were brilliant from a political standpoint. Again, I've talked about my philosophical, principled misgivings about it, but from a political standpoint, it was brilliant. Before that, they were saying there was a leadership vacuum, and this was why Joe Biden needed to be the next president, because he was going to start being the shadow president during this time. And they were saying, you know, Nancy Pelosi's with her well-named Families First Act in the Senate was doing so out of the House. Sorry, in the House. As I said that, I knew it was wrong. In the House was a better leader than he was. And now I'm seeing people trying to push the story that, oh, now people are going to want nationalized health care because that would have been the way to deal with this. Oh, even though. But that's the point, is you have two people, right? In the media, you have the people who solely just want clicks from a business pragmatic standpoint, because all business in this country has become pragmatic. You know, we saw that with the Boy Scouts letting in Girl Scouts, right? We've had this discussion before, that people are no longer pursuing values with business. They're just trying to make money. And then, two, you have the people in the media who we know have been around for a long time, and they're a large part of it, who are pushing a political agenda. And we're seeing that come out, too. And this is resulting in my opinion, people being overly scared of this.
Yeah. Well, and we know they're pulling out every stop, including the old saw, women and minorities hardest hit. I also posted in Discord. If you go to themidside.com, you can join our Discord. The headline, National LGBT Health Organizations Warn About Risks of COVID-19 for LGBTQ Population. So in other words, the gays are the hardest hit.
I thought black people were getting this at a lesser rate than everyone else. I thought this was basically the not kill black people virus. That was my...
That's funny, because in this article they point out it's because there's higher prevalence of smoking in the gay community as to why the disease has a more effect on the gay community.
So you're saying the article has nothing to do with gays at all. It has everything to do with smokers.
Bingo.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So I think there's something we should transition to here through this lens. And this lens is this weird intersectional lens where never let a good crisis go to waste. Everything is related to everything else. We can't talk about a pandemic without also trying to promote Marxism. There's two things here. One is, how do you sort through this? We've talked about this from many different angles, but this is just another angle to look at it. So how do you sort through this? How do you sort through the intersectionality in order to dig down and actually find information? And then I sort of want to transition into the topic of what do we do in a worst case scenario, and then also how do we, all three of us, identify times when if we're wrong in this scenario. Like how would we go about that? How would we even come to that conclusion in this scenario? Because I don't want us to be any more entrenched than anyone else. I want us to be as objective about this as possible. So Justin, how do you, first of all, dig through the intersectional garbage pile and get to anything useful? And then we'll go from there.
I mean, I have a simple answer. It might not be the answer you're looking for, but you ignore it. I mean, anyone who links any sort of virus or anything to shallow surface level groups that people belong to is completely dishonest and not worth paying attention to. You just need to understand that, are there really diseases and such that follow racial lines? And you just need to think in that way.
Sickle cell anemia?
Yeah, it's pretty rare. It has to be genetic, right? And even then, it's not the race, it's the underlying genetic.
Right.
Correct. Right. It's sickle cell anemia is not the race, correct?
It's more prevalent among certain races because that gene is more prevalent among certain
races. Correct. Right. So I don't even know how to answer your question, because to me it's just so fucking stupid. Like, but that's the thing about viruses, they don't care. That's the thing about diseases, they don't care. They don't care what race you are. They don't care what gender you are. They don't care what religion you are.
I think this article is trying to say that the disease is homophobic. Well, Daniel, I think I have to look through my myriad number of identities that I identify as throughout my work here on the show and outside and in public. I just cycle through so many identities to make sure I'm constantly checking my privilege. No, actually, you just have to ignore it. There's no way you have to be able to cut through, just like I did in this article, and say, oh, they're talking about a risky behavior, aka
wait, so
smoking.
I was right, just ignore it. Yes,
is that what you like to hear, Justin? You were right,
ladies and gentlemen. I am That's not true. A genius.
And then the second question, Daniel, you're asking, like, how do we know if we're wrong, right? When do we reassess? Well, I think that's a great point. What I'm looking at is based on what I know now. And what I know now is mainly about the media flip-flopping on the issue. That it has affected certain countries, right? There's many pages of obituaries coming out of Italy, which is sad. But then looking at the patterns and trying to shuffle through the data, this is getting back to that tweet for a second. We are not going to control the spread of this or any other disease, period. That's not the way these kinds of things work. If the goal is control of that disease, you're going to need to control all of reality. It's not going to happen. So I'm sifting through the people who are talking about flattening the curve, seeing if there's anything that I can integrate into my life and my values, because I'm sympathetic to that. You know, I want us to have a health system that is able to handle these sort of things, and that I'm sympathetic to that, to advice from that camp. I am definitely going to continue to point out the absurdity of buying toilet paper, and of not going to small gatherings, not enjoying time with other humans, of trying to make people feel guilty when they have no symptoms and presumably don't have the disease for doing anything other than locking themselves in the room. So how would I know if I was wrong? Well, if the media and the scientists working on this disease suddenly tell us the death rate is much higher, then that might change my behavior.
Yeah. And William, your point about the media flip-flopping and everything you just said really points to me as to why Trump has been so brilliant on this. And what I mean by that is people are saying he flip-flopped now. But I actually think he revealed his entire tactic that he does every time. And he lets the left and the media overextend themselves and outplay themselves. You know that meme? It's like, congratulations, you played yourselves. I think that's what Trump does. I think he knows the reality of this, and he came out in the beginning. He was like, this isn't a big deal. We're going to be fine. We're going to survive, which is what I was saying my sense of life is, right? The idea that it will be okay. The human species will survive. The country will survive. So he came out, and he set that as his point of view. Then they came out and whipped everyone into a frenzy, whipped everyone into a fervor, into a panic. Everyone's flipping out now. And then what did he do? He came out and he said, okay, you want more testing? We're going to test more people. Which, Daniel, isn't that just going to reveal what South Korea revealed? And the numbers are just going to make him look really fucking good?
You mean that the infection rate is super high, but the mortality rate is super low?
Yes.
Yes, there is an avenue by which he doesn't look good, which is we don't, quote-unquote, flatten the curve enough and the medical system is slammed. Then even if we do the right testing, he won't look all that great. But
right, and obviously he's betting that's not going to happen, but you always make a bet when you're making political moves.
Yeah.
And that's like, do you see what I'm saying his plan is and why I think it's a brilliant plan?
Yeah, I mean, look,
I
want
to be
not...
clear. Brilliant plan for him politically to get reelected. That's what I want to be clear about.
Right. Whether you think it's the objectively best way to deal with this is a different thing. We're going to talk about the politics of it. The thing that I admire about the Trump plan so far is that he at least has a natural. He has some reluctance in this area. That's better. To add a huge government apparatus. So essentially what he's done is loosen regulations. He's trying to make it easier for businesses to operate. He's partnering with like Walmart and Costco and all these private entities to help with the testing pipeline. And he's, at least in this area, I'll reiterate that, trying hard not to add a ton of bureaucracy. And I do appreciate that. I appreciate that that's not his natural inclination in this area.
So I know we're winding down here. Predictions. So predictions for the next couple weeks. Daniel.
Oh, boy. Well, I will get to that, but I actually want Justin to answer the question from before. Sorry, William.
I skipped and, over. Justin, yeah, I mean, it is his show. Sometimes we let him talk.
I'll frame it this way, Justin.
What's the question?
I'll frame it this way. Let's say sometime from now, I'm not going to say a few weeks, but sometime from now, 200 million people in the United States have contracted coronavirus, and we have a death rate of 0.6, which would put the number of deaths at 1.2 million. A couple things. One, would you say that you would consider yourself having been wrong about the coronavirus at that point? And then sort of a related question is how through the process, because obviously that's an end conclusion, how through the process are you personally reevaluating your rightness or wrongness?
In that instance, no, I would not consider myself wrong. I would say, how do we fix it? How would we have stopped it? It would be my issue to make me wrong, because it goes back to the point William made that I made earlier, the socially engineering point. How do you socially engineer reality to stop this from happening? How do you stop this disease from spreading? How do I, as I continue through this, assess my right and wrongness? I think William already answered that question beautifully, and it's you look at the numbers. If the numbers of this start leaping to the point that a huge amount of people are dying that wasn't expected, then I would consider myself wrong. Otherwise, I think this is all an overreaction. I think it's an overreaction driven by political purposes. Did that answer your question?
It does. I just wanted to get how you thought about it. Because personally, I think I've changed about 8% on this issue from the last episode, which is not a lot, but also not nothing. And the 8% on which I've changed is much more on the social distancing stuff. I take that a bit more seriously than I did before. And all I mean by seriously is the types of things I would exclude from doing. Now, I'm going into work on Monday because I have meetings and people want to have those meetings. And so I consider that to be perfectly fine. But, you know, we've decided not to go out a couple times this week instead of going out, like to dinner, for instance, because DC is still crowded and people are weird in DC.
I agree.
I think there's more dangerous
that.
Diseases than COVID-19 you might be catching in DC.
leftism. I'm immune.
I agree with you on all that, Daniel, except this goes to my overall point of what I was saying earlier about look at the way you're living your life already. To me, this is why I'm straight edge. To me, this is why I say there's a culture of alcoholism in this country. A lot of what people are complaining about is the irrationality that is already in place. I do not feel bad about going out to Epcot last night. It's going to close. It's going to be fine. It won't be there for a while. I'll have 2 weeks with shit else to do that I'm probably just going to sit at home the entire time, because what's the fucking point of going out? But if I'm at home and I'm not on lockdown and I go down the street to McDonald's, I don't feel bad about that, because I'm not going there touching and licking everything and hugging random people. I don't see the crackhead outside McDonald's and hug him. You know what I mean? Well, I'm not in California anymore either, but you get the point I'm making. I generally live a healthy life.
Yeah, it's meth so heads in Florida. Meth heads.
Yeah, it's meth. Correct. A lot of what people are raging against is the irrationality that already exists. Last night, I saw a bunch of old people at Epcot, and all I could think to myself is, for you, it's not worth the risk. For me, it is, but why are you here? And that's the problem. It's the irrationality that already exists that's the problem, Daniel. So if anything, the 8% I've moved with you is just that we have to figure out a way to educate other people to live better lives already when things are not sick. So when things like this happen, what do they say in times of crisis? This is a sports thing, right? In times of crisis, you don't develop your character. Your true character is revealed. Right now, we're not developing character. We're trying to get people to develop character. We're showing people's character as it is. And if we push them more towards collectivism, it will only make things worse the next time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just wanted to make those points only because of the whole foolish consistency thing where it's like, I don't want to be entrenched even in my own arguments to the point where I'm defending them just to save face. So I'm just being very upfront with our audience about that.
I'd rather save my life than save face, and that's the principle I live my life off of. So,
very good. So what do I think will happen in the next 2 weeks, William asked. I think, to be as broad as possible, I think things will get worse before they get better. I think the economy is likely to get worse before it gets better. But overall, projecting out past 2 weeks, this isn't necessarily a seasonal flu-like disorder that goes away in the summer, as far as I can tell, but the transmission will get better in the summer. So I think we will all be much less panicked when the weather is warmer. But in the meantime, I have some incredible job security, as most all programming that's going on now is digital. And we just held a digital symposium this weekend to replace an in-person symposium that was supposed to happen in Michigan. So I'll just be working my ass off for the next 2 weeks is what's going to happen.
William, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think the press will continue to overhype this until fatigue sets in. I think we're already starting to see the backfiring. And that, to me, is actually more dangerous because, like the old people at Epcot example, you're going to have people that are going to become, quote-unquote, deniers of this thing if the press keeps this up. I think we're going to have someone come out. We've already tried to blame the virus on Trump. I think we're going to get Trump doesn't like X people, where X is whatever identity group most hit by this disease. And then in 6 months, we'll all be scratching our heads, wondering why we did this gigantic interruption to the economy when the disease was inevitable. And that's what I think is going to happen.
Justin?
So I'm a combination of the two of you. I think the next week to 2 weeks, things are going to get a lot worse. And I don't necessarily mean sickness wise. I mean rhetoric and things that are done. I think they're going to shut down in the middle of this coming week interstate travel, especially to places like California and New York and Massachusetts. I think you're not going to be able to fly into those states, possibly fly out of those states. My worst fear is there's going to be a lockdown next week, not this coming week, but the week after. I'm afraid they're going to put us on lockdown then. But I am I'm more ambitious isn't the word I'm looking for, but I'm more optimistic. Optimistic than you, William. I think in a month we're all going to feel stupid about all this. I think when we get to the end of April, people are going to be like, "Wait, what were we worried about? What's going on?"
Maybe. I mean, I think there's 2 points there, neither of which we have time to delve super deep into. But the latter is maybe you're right there. But what my point is that they're already setting up this rhetoric about if flatten the curve, if social distancing works, then the end result will be all of us looking around basically saying, why did we do that? But that is, from them at least, a sign that it worked. which is an interesting rhetorical tactic, but one to consider if that's true or not. I don't think we have time to dive into it.
All I'm going
to
say about that is that's the self-evasion they always bake in, so if they're wrong, they don't have to be wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just let people think about it. Well, they can make up their own minds. Two is we didn't really talk about the legality side of things because none of us are super legal experts, but I do question. I said we should take bets on which state is going to be the first to close its borders.
California.
But also that that to me seems...
No, California's open borders. We welcome everyone.
There would be a deep irony if that's what gets California to close its borders. There is no doubt in my mind that that is wildly, wildly unconstitutional, and the federal government would probably step in to stop that. So, I don't know. That's an interesting point for another day.
All right, Daniel.
If there is another day...
Do we want to plug it all, or are we just going to get out?
Go to themidside.com/podcast if you want to listen to back episodes of the show while you're on home self-quarantine, while you're social distancing. Listen to all the social distancing we've been doing for years. And in fact, go to themidside.com/podcast, listen to us, and practice some social media distancing and not go on Twitter for a while because, jeezy Pete's.
Join us on Discord instead. We've been having a great time. The memes are hilarious. There are so much farce to witness. It's amazing.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emelznesky reminding you that if things get tough, I don't know, I think things are tough right now, right? So take a step back and witness the farce.
COVID-19 hates gay people. You know, we didn't get to talk about that young entrepreneur selling hand sanitizer at school and then getting sent home, kicked out of school for it.
Why do they hate capitalism, man? We also didn't talk about the inevitable coronavirus baby boom.
Oh, yeah. Now I was going to say, none of the stores look like they were sold out of condoms, and that might be a problem.
I saw someone online already calling them coronials. Fantastic.
Is their favorite breakfast food the Cronut?
Their favorite beer is definitely Corona.
Yeah.